This is the first time I've done something like this for this podcast. I've been meaning to do it for a while.
Haven't gone to any breweries yet.
No, I'm sitting in a brewery in Berthoud, Colorado.
Do you mostly just drink beer as far as like alcoholic drinks, or do you like also drink hard stuff or wine?
Berthoud's a small town about 50 miles north of Denver.
So I wanted to ask you, first of all, I hope it's not too dumb of a question. Is it Berthoud or Berthoud?
Berthoud.
Berthoud.
I found this place while driving into Berthoud for work.
I saw this. I found out about you guys because I was here a few weeks ago for work.
Okay.
And I was driving and I saw your trailer. And I was like, there's a brewery here. And I didn't think there would be because it's such a small town.
We're doing something a little different this week.
So I hope you don't mind. We do a podcast called Top Beer.
This week, I'm visiting the Berthoud Brewing Company.
Alright, so I just got into Berthoud. It's a small town. I really like it. It's like something out of a movie with a small main street with all the storefronts, like old school looking storefronts, I guess you could say. I really like small towns like this. It really has a character. Let's see. Oh, there it is. Berthoud Brewing. Alright, here we go. Just gotta stretch my legs out for a second. Tap room, it says. Hi.
How you doing, Jesse?
Adrian, nice to meet you.
Adrian. So we got all boxcar flooring that we used out of formerly Coors cars.
Nice.
For the flooring in here, for the bar top. Yeah, it's neat. We actually pulled this Berthoud sign here. There's a main. You see that big grain mill on the way into town?
Yeah, yeah.
That has like the big portrait on it. So I actually went up to the top of that building and got that sign out of there.
Nice.
So
was that like from the city or something? Or
it was actually on the old bank in town, like in the 50s. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you got a little piece of history in here.
That's right.
With that and with all this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Personal history, cool. So if you want to just tell me a little bit about since we're here, how did you guys start this brewery? Like, how did that, what was that process like?
That's kind of an interesting story. We had a guy that came to us with the idea for a brewery and was looking for a bar top originally. And I was talking to him in the shop about selling him his bar top, and I just kind of kept selling him stuff. And then he had an investor back out. He's like, I can't afford your stuff anymore. So my dad's like, why don't you make us a partner in it, and we'll supply the whole interior of your brewery. So that's kind of how we got into it. And then a year and a half down the line, we decided that we were going to proceed forward with another brewer and bought him out with another partner, with a new partner now, and got new brewer Kelly Lynch, who's been outstanding for us. So.
Okay. So what year was that? What year was it you guys started?
We opened in June of 2014.
2014, okay. So you guys are fairly new then.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Just hit 2 years in September. Well, it's our grand opening anniversary in September, so.
Nice. Why did you guys choose to do it here in Berthoud?
It's kind of where our roots are, really. I mean, we all live in Berthoud now. I've been in Berthoud for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's just found a good spot here, so.
Jesse showed me around the brewery, explaining a bit of the process.
So what's in here? What are we looking at in here?
This is our keg storage, our bright tanks. So after the beer is kicked off the fermenters, we move into these bright tanks to, basically that's in the name, right? Brighten the beer, clear it up, and carbonate, get ready for serving. So we actually do serve off a lot of these tanks.
Okay.
Right now he's kegging off the stout.
We ran into the brewmaster himself, Kelly Lynch.
How long is this process total? Like, just for this part?
We mash for 1 hour, and then we do a circulation to kind of clarify the word a bit for about 15. And then we transfer is an hour, and then we boil for an hour and a half. So right there you've got about 3.5. 4 hours.
The first thing I wanted to know about was their lineup of beers. But even before that, I was really curious about the art.
How do you guys like decide to, like your aesthetic as far as like the art for the beer labels and for the sign? Like, how'd you guys like do all that?
The art is actually a guy named Alex Carmona, based out of Greeley. It's a friend of my brother-in-law, and he just does like a lot of hot rod shows and stuff. Right now, he's actually going to Tokyo to be involved in a hot rod show there, and so he's a heck of an artist. Had a chance to move down to Austin and do that, but ended up staying here. So we were very lucky for that. You know, nice. Happy to have him here. He actually did this
piece with two tattooed arms. I saw that when I saw you guys' logo, I was like, that's really cool.
So yeah. How do you guys choose the names for your beers? Always been interested in how breweries go about that. Is there a story behind the name?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are named after kind of the local, like the 1888 is the...
And that didn't really get its name until like the day after it came out.
There's a lot of names. A lot of names for that one.
Was it sort of my commission, sort of? Like... What do you guys think of this name?
It's just kind of, tap room staff input, owner's input, some of my input, you know, it's.
We started at the top of the list. There's the 1888 Blondale, or as they like to call it.
Bud Wright,
yeah, that's kind of my, right.
I'll get to try Bud Wright later. Spoiler, it's pretty damn good. I learned something new about Kolsch and ghosts, and mostly that they aren't the same thing, and how ghost is actually pronounced.
Ghost?
G-O-S-E.
Oh, right. Goza. Because
I've heard the...
Goza is also made with... I believe that is also made with an ale yeast, but it's...
Hearing Kelly describe the beers made me think of him as a less of a brewer and more of a beer alchemist.
The profile on that one is kind of a little bit of a salty character.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
And it tends to be a little bit more fruit forward, I believe.
Yeah. As interesting as this all was, I would be lying if I said I didn't feel a little bit out of my element. Hearing Kelly talk really made me realize just how much work goes into it all. And making the beer was just part of it.
After brew day, I mean, we go through and we clean our mash and kettle, and then any tank that's empty, you know, is immediately cleaned. And then anytime you put, fresh wort into a vessel, like a fermenter, it's always sanitized before you, you know, transfer that into that vessel. And
there is, of course, one process to the whole operation I was pretty familiar with, the tasting.
I knew IPAs had hops in them. I didn't like English IPAs because they're too sweet.
Yeah.
This is an area I could definitely relate to Jesse a lot.
Did you have sort of that moment in your life when like you drank like the obviously like the mainstream beers like Bud Light, Coors, and whatever, and then you kind of like graduated to like more different?
I remember my first 12 pack of Busch Light. And then actually the first craft beer I ever had was either Ranger or Dale's.
Oh, okay.
Because they happened on the same night, so I'm trying to remember which. And I hated it. That's the first hoppy beer I ever drank. I was like, this is freaking terrible.
Yeah.
This is so bad. I drank one. You know, being from where I'm from, you don't turn down a free drink. Because it's rude.
Yeah.
So I drank it. I'm like, oh, that was just awful. This guy hands me another one. I'm like, oh, great. I drink that. I was like, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's terrible, but... And then the third one was like, I love this beer. Nice. I'm going to drink these all the time.
I remember when I was in college and I turned 21.
I'm going to grab three to drink with you.
All right, perfect. I remember, I turned 21. I was like, okay, I'm going to buy my first 12-pack of beer. And I bought Bud Light Select, thinking, oh, this is like...
Ooh, this is a premium.
This is their fancy
stuff. That's a Bud Ice.
Which I don't even think they sell anymore.
I don't think they do.
In doing so, I was able to learn more about Jesse's background and the connection to the brewing business.
But I'm actually getting ready to go back to Kansas City this weekend. And so my dad's very first wood shop he owned in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Or actually South Kansas City. It's a little town called Drexel. It's a town of 1,000. And this guy turned our very first wood shop ever into a brewery.
Oh, really?
Just like a month ago.
And it's just like a...
He's got a little 7-barrel system and he's... Got 6 or 7 beers on tap, so I'm so excited to go home and try a beer there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, my first house, you know.
Yeah.
My dad actually lives on a farm that was originally meant for growing barley for Coors. So it's kind of cool we have that connection back in the brewery now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I was learning all this between tastings, of course. Next up was their 50/30 Double IPA.
Yeah, so which one's...
So let's go with this darker orange one.
Darker one, okay.
Almost a coppery color again.
Yeah.
Take a look at the clarity of it.
That's really clear, yeah.
And again, none of our beer is filtered. It's just that
our brewer is very critical about everything that he does. Yeah. So.
I even learned about Centennial hops, which, for the record, aren't from Centennial, Colorado.
That Centennial, not really known as much of a dank hop like a Simcoe, which I'll give you a little splash of that Rayfield Red, and you'll notice the Simcoe in it right away.
Yeah.
A lot of the hops now can be brewed, or not brewed, grown pretty much anywhere. Like, Centennial can be grown in Colorado, it can be grown in California, it can be grown, you know, basically the west of the Mississippi. And I'm not sure about east side if it holds up as well, but it can be grown relatively anywhere as far as that one's pretty universal.
Okay. Lastly, well, like not lastly, more. Lastly, I was trying their Hop de Ville. This was a delicious beer, and as a bonus, I got an awesome backstory on it.
So this is the Hop de Ville.
Hop de Ville, okay.
We were on a research and development day in Fort Collins. Two owners, myself and our brewer, which consisted mostly of us hanging out at a few breweries, drinking some beer.
Yeah. That's the best kind of research, right?
Yeah. It's exactly how you research the product. You have to try it. So the Hop de Ville, we were all riding in one of the owners' Cadillac. He's got a Cadillac de Ville, like an older one. It's really cool. And we're like, man, this thing is smooth. We should make like a big hoppy SOB that's just smooth like a Cadillac. And so we made the Hop de Ville.
And that's how that came about.
And there's the shirt. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Is that an official shirt of you guys?
It is, yeah.
Nice. That is a cool shirt.
Yeah, we've got a guy that he's got like a 1960 Cadillac Coupe de Ville that's, I mean, it's like 45 feet long.
It's a boat.
Exactly. They're pretty cool.
The Hop de Ville, by the way, is very hoppy.
Well, there's eight different kinds of hops.
Eight different kinds of hops. That's what it is.
Yeah. Right, and which is pretty extreme for.
Yeah. And it tastes stronger. I mean, I can taste, obviously, it's 11.4.
Right.
I mean, I can taste how strong it is. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. 11.4, it's not a slouch.
No.
I don't think I realized the gravity of the situation. I also didn't realize just what gravity means when it comes to brewing beer.
What instruments do you guys use to determine the ABV and the IBU? Like, is there, machines have like a.
There's a. Oh, shoot. How do they measure it?
It's got a little. Pretty much like a
yeah, it measures the gravity, basically, of it.
Okay.
And that, like, the initial gravity versus what you end up with. And he'll be able to tell you about that a little more, the science behind it, because we call him the mad scientist, lovingly.
Yeah. yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
Being a guy that has a, you know, biology degree in pharmaceutical science background, and then moving to fermentation science, he's pretty well versed in all that.
that's like the perfect thing you need to be a brewer.
So yeah,
like,
right? Chemistry and biology.
As the beer took its course, I definitely felt more relaxed and, frankly, more at home. My next beer was the Rayfield Red.
So which this is the.
This is the Rayfield Red.
Okay.
Coming in at 6.6 alcohol and 68 IBUs.
Yeah. So almost as strong as a DeVille, but not quite there, right?
It's actually it's a lot more bitter.
Yeah.
Than the Hop DeVille, so impact on your tongue, it'll almost feel stronger.
Yeah, I really like the color on it too.
The color's pretty. It's like a really, almost like a. Fruit punch you'd pick up at the store, right?
Yeah.
And when you smell it.
Jesse talked more about his foray into beer, starting with wine, of all things.
It's kind of like the first time you had wine.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, you know, I remember the first time I had wine, I was a kid, I was at communion. And my family, like my aunt and uncle were Catholic.
We then talked more about our transition into old age, sort of.
It maybe is one of those things, as you get older,
your taste
you learn to appreciate it, or is. It might be an evolutionary change. I don't know.
I mean, I used to hate like onions in my burger and stuff.
Right.
I love it.
I love onions.
Yeah, I love.
I used to despise pickles. I'd pull pickles off my burger or pickles, no pickles. And now I can, like, I'm still not a huge fan of the sweetness on my burger because I love the beef flavor.
Yeah.
But I will eat pickles now.
Yeah. It's got to be that because I mean.
It has to be, right? It has. Yeah. Is it evolutionary as it goes as you get older?
That your tastes do physically change as you get older, like physiologically. There's something that just kind of evolves as you get older.
Maybe as you become more of a bitter old man, you appreciate the bitter flavors.
I'm a bitter old man now. So
It happens quickly.
There were many aspects of running a brewery I learned about from the day-to-day operations.
But I used to be the general manager here, and at one point I was lead bartender. I'd work five or six nights in a row doing 14-hour days with my other job, but that got too much.
To building flights.
If people want to come in and drink all of them, like little samples, all of them.
Yeah.
And the reason why you do that is that way, you know, if we're just, if I just throw random five beers in, and so you drink a Monk Punch, and then a little Thompson, and then a Carter Kolsch, and then a 5030, and then a Hop DeVille, you'd not drink that, or you'd not taste the Kolsch, because you just drank a little Thompson.
The distribution.
We only distribute to about four or five breweries or restaurants right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just with our limited capacity here for production. But hopefully when we get the extra fermenters in, we'll be able to double our distribution to at least 10 or 12 restaurants, so I'm hoping for.
Even mobile canning. So
I didn't know it was a thing, mobile canning, but apparently you can actually, my friend
in LA what's tough about it right now is you have to have 30 barrels to do mobile canning, and we have 23 and a half fermenting barrels.
So you're almost there.
We're almost there. So 30 barrels.
That's the thing I never realized is like just how much work goes into doing what you guys do.
Me neither. That's what I got into it. I was like, this will be fun.
Yeah.
It's brewery. This is going to be great.
You just brew the beer.
But I was like, oh my God, you work all the time.
Yeah, because like I watched like a...
I used to work like 8 to 1:30 at my shop and then come here and work 1:30 to 10 at the brewery. And I was like, oh my God, these 14-hour days are making me a little nuts.
And there was another aspect of running a brewery and a tap room that I hadn't really thought about that much, and that was the human aspect.
Have you ever had to, what's the term, 86 someone? What is it?
Yes. Yeah, we've had two or three that we've had to ask to leave and not come back.
Oh.
One of which was more difficult because it was a regular, but got in that situation where his wife left him and it all kind of went downhill for him. So
that's a shame.
We liked him, but whenever you're being rude to other guests and making it an environment in which it's not relaxing and a place to drink a good beer and listen to good music and hang out, you have to go.
That's got to be the hardest part for running something like this, right?
It is.
Cause not even the logistics of doing all this, but like...
You know, you legitimately start to care for everybody that comes in here. I mean, they become your friends because you see them, you know, 3-4 times a week. And as a busy guy, I don't see my friends like twice a month. I'm lucky, you know.
Yeah.
So you start to see these people all the time. And then if they get into a bad spot, you have to say, take a hiatus. Don't come in here for a while until you get your head right or kick someone out. It can hurt a little bit. Cause
it's, for sure.
You know, it's not a fun thing to do. I'm a people pleaser. I don't like to ask people not to come hang out.
Yeah.
I left Berthoud Brewing slightly buzzed, slightly hungry because I hadn't eaten, and slightly more knowledgeable on how a brewery is run. I also left with a couple of tips for some beers to try, thanks to Jesse.
Oh man, I got a chance to go to Ballast Point.
Oh really? How was that?
It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, it was a new location, so it was like right on the ocean.
Oh, nice.
It was beautiful, man. The beer was great, obviously. I'm a huge Ballast Point fan. That's probably one of my top five breweries in the country. Have you ever tried their grapefruit sculpin?
I haven't.
Oh.
Is that a port?
Live.
What kind of beer is that?
It's a grapefruit IPA.
That's a grapefruit IPA? Yeah. I haven't had that.
Like that and Bell's Brewing.
Bell's Brewing?
You ever heard of them?
I have not, actually.
So they've got a beer called Two Hearted. It's their Two Hearted IPA.
Uh-huh.
It is phenomenal. It's actually it's like the beer that inspired our brewer.
And I, of course, couldn't leave without tasting their Kolsch beer.
And this is your Carter Kolsch.
Carter Kolsch, named after Lake Carter. The people at the bar up there lovingly refer to it as the Carter Lake beer.
I can smell the malt in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll pick that up a little more. Like in the 1888, you got a little more grassy scent.
Yeah.
This one's a little more bready.
Oh, yeah.
If you get that.
I can smell that. Oh, wow. That's very bready.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a bad way.
No, but it's just, that's more the style. What's funny for, like, talking to Kelly about this Kolsch here, like, when GABF and beer wars come up and stuff, we talk about what beers to put in. He never mentions this one. Well, we talk about it, but he never does this one because he says for a Kolsch, it has a little too much flavor.
Oh, really?
Which for me is fairly neutral beer. Because I'm a big flavor guy, so for me, like, that's as minimal flavor as I'd like in a beer.
thank you very much again.
Yeah,
it was nice
to
meet you.
Very nice to meet you.
We'll be in touch for sure.
Yeah.
All in all, visiting Berthoud Brewing was a fantastic experience. I highly recommend it if you're ever in Colorado and want an intimate brewery experience. You should definitely check them out. They have live music on the weekends and, of course, delicious brews. Thanks again to Jesse Summers for showing me around and letting me try their delicious beers. And thanks, of course, to the head brewer himself, Kelly Lynch, for enlightening me on the beer-making process. Check out BerthoudBrewing.com for more information, and be sure to follow me at Della Boots on Twitter, as well as Lucha Undead and the newly revived @StoryGerm podcast. We will see you next week.